The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, my friends. It is Thursday, May 27th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to Rolla J Studios and Normal Show Live, where not only do we love our Cool Whip, we love our herb.
Whip.
Cool Whip. Whip. And joining us here in the studio, pushing the buttons and turning the knobs, the maestro, Ganja John.
Hello, Travis. Are you enjoying your herb and your Cool Whip?
Your Cool Whip. And joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-sister, Cannabis Carrie.
I know you guys aren't supposed to take that stuff right out of the can, right?
No, it's Cool Whip. It doesn't come in a can. That's the Ready Whip stuff. How you doing, Carrie?
Excellent. It's gorgeous here on the coast today.
All right. I want to just make a couple of notes for the show today. You may be looking at the webcam and noticing less stuff. I had this brilliant epiphany yesterday that I could take the booms off the mic stands and just stick the mics on the stand itself. So we got a little more room on the camera. You can see my gorgeous color palette today that I borrowed from Miami Vice circa 1986. So glad to have that on today. Also want to let you know today's show is brought to you by the letter G. The letter G is for today's show. The letter G. Just remember that because G is for ganja, greenbud, giggle stick, and is found in two of my favorite synonyms, muggles and staggerleaf. Staggerleaf. I love that one. Staggerleaf.
Giggle stick.
Giggle stick. That's a good one, too. All right. A couple of other notes here. We've been getting some questions at Normal about having a list of candidates people should vote for in upcoming elections. And they're saying, why doesn't Normal have a list like that? I just got to let you know that Normal's a 501c3 organization. And because of that, we can't directly endorse any candidates. So we can't put out a list that says vote for this person or vote for that person. However, we do have research on their positions. It's a little feature we call Politicians on Pot. You can find it at our Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Look in the very top menu, look under the archives, and you'll find Politicians on Pot. Every time somebody writes to one of their elected officials, and that elected official sends an email back, we post it up there. It's all cataloged by state. You can find your elected officials if someone has written them and send them to us. If you've got letters from your elected officials, add them to our database. Just send them to me here at stash@normal.org. Now, Cannabis Carrie brings us our news right after our first break. So, Carrie, what's in the headlines today?
Well, we're going to go to New Jersey. It looks like the people that have won the right for legal medical marijuana might have to wait a little bit longer. We're also going to check into a story in Maine and cover a raid there where a man is claiming that the state owes him a big bag of money. And also, we're going to go out to Michigan where that smokers club was raided. More in just a few minutes.
All right. And speaking of the Michigan raid, I'm going to be talking about that in length today. At the end of the show, 45 after, I'm doing one of my radical rants. I'm calling this one What's wrong with getting medicated? So check that out at 45 after. We'll be talking about that Michigan raid in depth. Today is Groovin' Thursday for our daily Toker Tune. So at 20 after, John Doe from John Doe Radio brings us some great music from Fishbone today. And then at 30 after, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Major Neil Franklin joins us to talk about the future of LEAP. It's all coming.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
In the No Garden state of New Jersey, the most recent state to legalize medical marijuana is taking a break from the process. News broke yesterday of a request for a possible 12-month delay in implementing the program in the state. New Jersey passed the most restrictive medical marijuana program to date. The law was a victory for advocates in the non-ballot initiative state and signed into law by outgoing Governor John Corzine in January as he stepped down from his position. The law was to take effect in July of this year. New Jersey residents living with cancer, HIV, and MS have already spoken with physicians in anticipation of being able to use the non-pharmaceutical treatment. Sources in state government say that over 2,000 people who would qualify because of their serious condition have already contacted the Department of Health and Senior Services in the last few months. Now the current governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, has asked for a year-long delay to ensure that the proper regulations and controls are in place, according to a spokesman, noting that it is a complicated issue and the office wants to make absolute sure it is done correctly. Battle-weary advocates who have been working for years to win the rights of patients to choose medical marijuana are frustrated with the process. Ken Wolski, a nurse and executive director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey, said in a statement, "Patients are suffering now, and to tell them they must continue to suffer for another year because of the bureaucrats in Trenton is unacceptable. Patients must register with the state and will be limited to 2 ounces of marijuana every 30 days, and that can only be obtained through a for-profit and non-profit alternative treatment centers regulated by the state. Patients are not allowed to grow their own marijuana. Draft rules for the cannabis program were expected from DHSS in July, with patients hoping for the first legal medical marijuana distribution this fall. Senator Nicholas Scutari, a prime sponsor of the law, said the administration asked him to introduce a bill to extend the implementation deadline. He is considering it, Scutari said recently, but reluctantly at that. With the new information from the governor's office, patients are left in the dark as to exactly when they will be able to take advantage of a law that has already sat on the books for 5 months.
Wow. You know, when this law was passed as well, it had a 6-month implementation built into it. That's how long they were supposed to take, 6 months to implement this program. People who are sick, dying, sense threatened, disabled, in pain, have been waiting for July for this law to go into effect. And now the governor, Chris Christie, wants to put 12 more months delay on that. Who's going to be the next John Ray Wilson in this situation? John Ray Wilson's the New Jersey medical marijuana patient with multiple sclerosis who was caught growing plants months before this law passed. And so he's faced all sorts of legal troubles because of that. Who's going to be the next person who can't wait that extra 12 months, Governor Christie, to suffer in pain for another year after the people have passed the most restrictive law, I should say the legislature, has passed the most restrictive law in the country with regard to medical medical marijuana. The argument that you need 12 more months to figure out how to implement is ridiculous when you consider there are 13 medical marijuana states to look at with successful programs. Everything going on in the New Jersey program is something you can find an analog of in one of the existing or more than one of the existing medical marijuana states. New Mexico has state licensing and regulation of dispensaries. Rhode Island is working on that. We've got all sorts of registry programs in Oregon, Montana, Colorado to look at. There's so much example, so much law to look at, so much settled law to look at, that I can't believe that the lawmakers in New Jersey couldn't figure out how to implement this program and need a whole nother year. People will suffer during that year. Governor Christie, get this law implemented now.
A story out of Maine where a man whose home was raided by drug agents says that the state owes him thousands of dollars for the 19 cannabis plants they seized from his home. James Fowler's home was raided on March 19th, and he was charged with cultivating marijuana and possession. The grow room in his house was to supply three additional patients who have deemed him as a designated caregiver under the law. Fowler was home alone when nine agents came to his house on a Friday afternoon with a search warrant. Fowler at first was very cooperative, showing them his paperwork and that of the patients he was allowed to grow for. But when an officer implied that Fowler was still in violation of the law, he stopped volunteering information. Fowler said that at the point that he had been read his Miranda rights, he decided to remain silent. According to the law, Fowler can possess up to 2.5 ounces of processed marijuana and six plants for each patient, for a total of 24 plants and 10 ounces of marijuana. Investigators found 25 plants in the March raid, but Fowler said some of the plants were male juveniles, which he said were not considered marijuana plants under the law. The agents made a call to the district attorney, who instructed the officers to leave behind six plants, which they did. The district attorney has said that Fowler hadn't provided information about his caregiver status and contends the officers acted with restraint in the situation. Fowler says that they can now see his paperwork in June at a court date when he has an attorney present. He has a marijuana prescription because of a severe degenerative disc disease that would require risky back surgery, which he is trying to avoid. He says that he's prescribed with a cocktail of powerful painkillers and muscle relaxants, but rarely takes them because he is unable to even get out of bed when on pharmaceuticals. Fowler says that for him, medical marijuana isn't about getting high. If he wanted to get high, he would eat their morphine. He says that cannabis makes his life livable and only needs to stop smoking for a day or two to realize the medical benefits. Fowler is asking that the Somerset County officers who conducted the raid pay him up to $38,000 for the 19 plants they illegally seized, because of the figures used by police to value marijuana plants in bus, saying that if they can say a plant is worth $2,000 during a marijuana bus, that they have already assigned a value and he is owed the money. Now, I just wanted to make one more point about this story. The story came from the Bangor Daily News, and thanks to one of our legal advocates here in Oregon, I'm very sensitive to this fact now, they gave his exact street address and then mentioned in the piece three different times that this 44-year-old man with limited physical ability lives alone. He says that he lives in a trailer park, and already he feels he needs to move because his neighbors think he's some high-level dealer because of the raid.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of tragedy that befalls people, that even if they aren't arrested, even if they are found legal, the stigma of having the drug raid cops showing up at your place can lead to a lot of problems with your neighbors. It's just ridiculous. These people that are sick and just trying to take care of themselves, and the way law enforcement treats it is they've got to treat it like there's a crime going on until they can prove there's not one going on. Right? Because there's marijuana plants, and we have this law that says marijuana plants are desperately illegal. We just cannot have them no matter what. Oh, unless you're really sick and suffering, and then you can have them. But they've got to assume first the marijuana plants are illegal, and then figure out whether or not you're a patient after that. That's why medical marijuana doesn't go far enough in protecting patients, much less the people like me who are healthy and not deemed worthy of keeping out of jail for our marijuana use. This also goes along with a story that I posted on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. This guy is not out of bounds with talking about having the police reimburse him for that value for the plants. I love this because so many times we go over these raid stories where they'll say, well, the police say raised $500,000 worth of marijuana, and they're counting these little seedling starts as plants and saying they're, well, they would be worth $2,000 by the time they grew up, or they would be worth $4,000 by the time they grew. Yeah, right. You know, talk about counting your chickens before they hatch. If they can use those kind of numbers and those kind of strategies, why can't we, when we're going and trying to get our legal property returned to us? There is a story out of San Luis Obispo County where the county just paid $20,000, cut a check for $20,000 to a medical marijuana patient, the equivalent of $3,333 per pound of the cannabis. Now, this was prepared cannabis, you know, groomed buds. This wasn't plants, but still, $3,300 per pound as replacement value, got $20,000 for that because the doctor had signed a recommendation that allowed her to possess up to 6 pounds of dried marijuana buds. Now, people hear that, and we did the Anna Song story a couple days ago where it's like, oh, 3 pounds of marijuana a year. Pounds of marijuana. Oh, my God, pounds. You ever seen a pound of sugar, right? That's about like what a pound of marijuana is like. It's not really a whole lot of marijuana. And the woman that they took this from, check this out. She got a diagnosis of liver cancer, and they informed her she had less than a year to live. Though currently in remission, her cancer is in remission, she has daily nausea as a side effect of the cancer treatment, and that's caused her weight to drop to as low as 98 pounds. Now, in addition to going through cancer and nausea, she had had a car accident that left her with 2 herniated discs, a fractured disc, and a broken disc. She's endured 2 back surgeries and has constant pain for days at a time and is bedridden. And this was the sheriff, David Walker, in San Luis Obispo County, who wanted to run in and take her 6 pounds of medicine from her because she's some sort of drug dealer or something. This is, again, why medical marijuana doesn't go far enough. Patients will never be truly protected so long as law enforcement has a very profitable motive to go after marijuana. Carrie, thank you for the story.
And one more. According to the Lansing State Journal, a Tri-County Metro Narcotics Squad raided a medical marijuana smokers club in Williamston, Michigan on Wednesday. Patients who were at the club at the time are reporting that they were forced to the ground like criminals, even those with canes. The club, Greenleaf Smokers Club, is a private club that was opened in February, and with no previous incidents, it is unclear why the raid took place at this time or even what the officers found when they shut the place down. The club is not a dispensary, according to founder Reverend Wayne Daggett, who said the main goal of the club was to create a casual atmosphere in which users can bring their own cannabis, medicate with others, and form new relationships. Earlier this year, Ingham County Sheriff Gene Wigglesworth called the club a joke and says that the club is exactly what law enforcement said would happen when the state passed the medical marijuana ballot measure. He said that the club has nothing to do with medical marijuana and has to do with getting high. Although the narcotics squad confirmed that the raid had occurred, no other information is being offered at this time because it is still under investigation. The patients at the club during the raid were allowed to leave after they showed their medical marijuana cards. Unfortunately, owner Wayne Daggett was arrested. According to court officials, Mr. Daggett will be arraigned later this afternoon to face charges of possession with intent to deliver. However, those charges may change. Daggett, who has cancer, was in the hospital earlier today for an unknown reason, although he is currently listed as being in the Ingham County Jail. Daggett maintains that his club complies with the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, the ballot initiative that legalized medical marijuana back in 2008. The club remains closed due to his absence, and we will follow the story and keep you informed.
Oh, yeah. I've got a whole rant about this at 45 after the hour. We're going to talk a little bit about this one. But before we do, I wanted to just put this quick graphic up on the webcam for people to look at. This is a view from Google Earth of the location of the smoking club that they just busted here, the Green Leaf. Now, I don't know how well you can see the resolution here, but surrounding this are no less than, well, it's almost completely surrounded by open tracts of land, right? So this is not like in a residential neighborhood. This is not causing anyone any problems. This is like Tooleyville, right? This is the middle of nowhere. Now, there's a little bit of development over there on the left there, some rich folks' houses. Maybe that has something to do with it. But otherwise, this place is basically in the middle of nowhere. And let me pan out a little bit on this. You can see where the cities are. Lansing is to the left, to the west, and you'll see the Willington or whatever the place was called over to the right over there. So still, when I pan out, you can see this place is literally in the middle of nowhere. What problem it could have been causing housing for anyone in the state. I don't understand why they would have to bust these people. And to take a man who's in a cane and force him to the ground like he's going to be some sort of threat to the law enforcement officers, the well-armed law enforcement officers, I'm sure, that went in to make this bust, it's just ridiculous. I got a lot of opinions on this. We'll talk about it in the Radical Rant at the end of the show. It also has to do with cannabis clubs, has to do with the cannabis cafes that we have in Oregon and elsewhere. It's a bigger concept than just this one, and we'll talk about it at the end of the show. All right, time for us to take a break. It's 20 after. Get relaxed. Get to your happy place. When we come back, we've got some Groovin' Thursday music from Fishbone. Stick around. It's Normal Show Live.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that, but finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Normal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow away.
Yeah, like finding a unicorn. You know, there's about 40,000 people in jails and prisons right this moment for nothing but marijuana possession. Boy, I'm glad that guy's not drug czar anymore. Radical Russ, Normal Show Live. We're back now with John Doe and your Groovin' Thursday.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Fishbone, been around since 1979, longer than some of us have been on this planet. Certainly longer than my existence here, and for that I must tip my hat. In the short-lived time of one-hit wonders and bubblegum pop acts, a 30-year career could be an eternity for some people. Through their early career, Fishbone became popular for being one of the most diverse bands in alternative rock. Fishbone has had tunes on MTV, and in 1991 even played Saturday Night Live. In 2002, Fishbone also played the Cannabis Cup, so you tell me which spot is more of an accomplished there. Let's see, Saturday Night Live, Cannabis Cup. And if that wasn't enough, how about the movie Say Anything? You know, the one with John Cusack and the iconic boombox scene, holding it over his head, you know, the song In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel playing. During live shooting of the scene, John Cusack actually played Fishbone on the boombox. In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel was added later, and in the recent flick Hot Tub Time Machine, John Cusack pulls out a Fishbone t-shirt from his bag and displays it for everyone. To say the least, John Cusack's a Fishbone fan. And also to say the least, Fishbone has had an impact and been around through a lot. A great tune from Fishbone called We Just Lose Our Minds is the choice cut for this week. Enjoy, Tokers. And I am John Doe. Until we meet again, see ya, Tokers.
Got those aches and pains in your behind, but it's in your head where you will find. You must strap on your safety belt and shield your fender in case they try to wheel your end. You'll get a foot in the ass every time. You to the ground sometime.
All I know is we just lose our
minds. Feel the tick and talk around.
Just lose our minds.
Oh, stuck with a stick like
Stone. We Just Lose Our Minds. We'll have the entire track available up at the Stash blog, stash.normal.org. Thanks, John Doe, for the tune.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. Did you know that police arrested a record 829,625 people in the United States for marijuana violations in 2006? Marijuana arrests now comprise nearly 44% of all drug arrests in the United States. Of those charged with marijuana violations, approximately 89% were charged with possession only. The total number of marijuana arrests in the United States for 2006 far exceeded the total number of arrests for all violent crimes combined. Enforcing marijuana prohibition costs taxpayers between $10 and $12 billion annually and has led to the arrest of nearly 20 million Americans. We must end this war on drugs. With your help, we can. Please join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending this civil war. You can do so by going to leap.cc.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition. Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and we're joined by Major Neil Franklin. He's a 33-year law enforcement veteran of both the Maryland State Police and the Baltimore Police Forces, and he is a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Neil, welcome back to the show.
Hey, glad to be here, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, and I'm always glad to have our LEAP speakers here on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. And we kind of generally wanted to talk about the future of LEAP. You've been involved with the organization for quite some time, and we're looking at states now that are talking openly about legalization of marijuana, especially out here on the West Coast. How is LEAP involved with that? Are they actively pushing for this legalization and speaking out on the West Coast, and what will the future be for LEAP if we pass legalization?
Well, yes, a couple things there. Let me begin with California, since that is very much on our radar and their recent initiative. See, this is extremely important because, you know, with this passage in California, I think it will begin the push across the country that's very much needed. We are actively out there. We are working with the California representatives who are in favor of marijuana legalization in California. We are speaking at various engagements out there, letting people know that law enforcement, many law enforcement officials do support this, and for the many reasons we need to. One of the things that we're doing is we are beginning to focus a little bit more on post-prohibition. You see, Russ, because this needs to change. We have to change in this country.
Yeah.
And hopefully beginning with California, we have to change. We can't afford it anymore. We can't afford it due to the body count. We can't afford the cost. We can't afford all the other surrounding issues. And I think you mentioned the disconnect between police and communities, between citizens, and all because of prohibition, so we can't afford this any longer. The future of LEAP, one of the things that we're going to focus on, in addition to moving these initiatives along in various states, beginning with California, we need to get more involved with many of the local organizations many of the law enforcement organizations that are out there, as I speak to these police officers around the country who are still very much active in their communities, active in law enforcement, you know, off the record, they know that this has to change. They're tired of it. They're tired of putting their lives on the line. They're tired of the friction that they feel in these communities when they're out there trying to do good things. And if we can get more involved in their community, in internal communities such as the FOP and all the other organizations that they have out there, I think that we can give them a sense of confidence for them to go out and speak, even though they still wear the uniform, as many elite members do.
Okay, and you mentioned that you're working with the friendly legislators there in California. I'm wondering about the opponents, which are primarily law enforcement, the California Narcotics Officers Association, prison guard unions, and so on. What is LEAP doing to try to break through that blue wall there in the opposition?
Well, unfortunately, with those particular groups, we haven't had much of any communication with. And, you know, we understand that there are some reasons, and I don't have a problem with saying it at all, especially when your day-to-day job involves going out here and enforcing the current prohibition laws. I think many people in these positions feel as though their livelihoods are at stake. You'll hear them talk about the potential of losing jobs if these laws change, but what they fail to realize is that that wouldn't be the case. That, you know, whether we're talking corrections officials or whether we're talking those who are enforcing narcotics laws, their roles may change, of course, but their jobs won't be lost. First of all, our prisons are greatly overcrowded.
I mean,
and they always talk about how dangerous it is in these institutions due to overcrowding.
Sure.
And that's true. So now we would get the population down considerably. Their jobs won't be as dangerous, and that's a win-win for everyone, but their jobs won't be lost. As we talk about the police officers who work primarily narcotics cases, I mean, you know, when I came on, and of course that's what I did in Maryland, most of my time was spent in narcotics investigation, but Russ, the real reason I came on was to do great things in communities. The real reason I came on was to solve those crimes, such as crimes against people, violent crimes against people, such as rape, child abuse, homicides, aggravated assaults, robberies, home invasions. That's what I really came on for, to make those communities better, not go around chasing people off of corners who are selling narcotics.
Yeah. And of course, Baltimore, we've seen the TV show on HBO, The Wire. People kind of associate that show with being a gritty look at how drug laws are enforced in this country. And you had a quote that was in your bio here that I wanted to touch upon, because I think it addresses the police mentality, what we see in law enforcement sometimes. You got a quote that says, "I'd been taught that the people who use and sell drugs are trash and that we needed to put these people behind bars forever." How was that taught? Is it taught officially like that? Is it out in the open, or is it more just police attitudes that are ingrained through the community of law enforcement?
Now, it's not taught officially in the academies, and I commanded the two largest academies, including Baltimore's academy, in the state of Maryland. And, it's not taught in the classrooms. It's not taught behind those walls where the training occurs for 6 months. What happens is when these officers get out into the streets and they then are partnered with an officer out in the street who's been out there for a while, and they say, you know what? All of that stuff you learned in the academy, forget about it. We're going to show you how it's done out here on the street.
Okay.
Because unfortunately, prohibition has made it a violent community out there, you know, in the drug market. Prohibition has brought this violence, you know, out there. And so these officers that are out there, they feel that in order to survive, in order to protect themselves from that violence, they have to approach these situations from a very defensive position, sometimes to the point where it's an offensive position. And it's gotten to the point now where everyone in a community where you have open-air drug markets and violence, it's it's gotten to a point where they treat everyone as a suspect initially until it's proven otherwise. But by then, it's too late because you've already violated someone's Fourth Amendment rights, and you've already, you know, established this wall in between you and those citizens in that community. And so, therefore, those it's taught in the streets. You know, it's, mm-hmm. you know, this is how we have to treat these people.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we have to do.
And they
say it's the Bible, you know, and it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't. And we see this in study after study, the New York data that we've talked about here on the show, with in Philadelphia as well, the disproportionate arrest and harassment of minorities in the war on drugs. And I've always wondered, you know, minorities bear the brunt of this war on drugs as far as stop and frisks and being incarcerated and being sentenced and so on. And yet when it comes to fighting against that, to come up with a solution against that, the polling in California, for example, shows that among Latinos, they have the lowest support for passing the legalization of marijuana. In African-American communities, we see similar numbers. Why the disconnect? How do we get through to minority communities to show them that ending prohibition is in their best interest more than mine as a white person?
I agree with you, Russ. I've seen the very same thing, whether you're on the West Coast or whether you're here on the East Coast in Baltimore. It has been a challenge, and I think that first it's due to a lack of really good information about the harmful effects of prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
I think for some reason we're dealing with a learning curve here is, you know, it relates to this information getting out. I think that there are very few forums in which that information does get out or has the potential to get out in these communities, but I'd like to say that we are beginning to make some really good headway with certain branches of the NAACP, for instance.
Oh, really?
I think that, yes, actually, one of the main supporters is the California president, Alice Huffman.
Oh, that's right.
For the NAACP, for that initiative. And I've had some conversations with her, and this is really interesting. When I first started talking to her about a month ago, I called her, and I introduced myself, and she had no idea there were so many police officers in support of this initiative. She had never heard of LEAP, and we had a very good conversation. And by the end of it, I mean, she's like, wow, this is great. I never knew it. And that is the same across this country. Even though we've reached out to many, I guess you can say, many branches or the head of the NAACP here in Washington, D.C., the word just hasn't traveled. So we're really going to work on that. We're doing some work in Florida now with the NAACP. We're beginning some work here in Baltimore with the NAACP. And we're just going to start moving around at some of the local branches and getting the word out and bring it from the ground floor up. And that's just an example of one organization, but we're pretty much doing the same with many others too. So we're going to get there. It's just a matter of having the number of people out there within the communities to share this information, to get in front of particular organizations and give them the facts, give them the history, give them the picture of what it would look like in post-prohibition, which I'm really excited about. As a matter of fact, my conversation now is pretty much almost always about post-prohibition because, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, we got to do this. We don't have a choice.
Yeah.
We're losing this country.
Yeah, a luxury we can't afford anymore. And, you know, I don't want it to be misconstrued either as if I'm blaming anyone for not standing up. I've often thought that, you know, if you've already got a target on your back, you know, and you get the dealing with driving while brown and all these other terrible things you have to deal with, that maybe putting a normal sticker on your book isn't the thing you're going to do. So I understand that aspect as well. You know, self-preservation, absolutely. Neil Franklin here is from LEAP and also a longtime Baltimore police officer, and you said you had so many promotions that you seemed like you were always at a new position, but primarily working in narcotics. I did want to focus on one thing in your bio here that I thought was really interesting, and that is your work with the Faith-Based Community Council on Law Enforcement and the Place of Grace Church. And I'm wondering maybe if you have any insight on how we get our message across of ending prohibition to faith communities.
Well, we've just begun our cops and clergy program. And I did a trial run at a Presbyterian church in Baltimore, Govan's Presbyterian Church, about a month and a half, maybe 2 months back. And it was well received. It went over very well. I think that historically people thought that it would be immoral to allow people to use mind-altering substances. But here's the thing. When it comes to religion, I'd use the word religion per se, just for the sake of this conversation, but when it comes to that, in the world of Christianity, and it relates to morals and morality, first of all, God gives you freedom of choice. That's first. Second, I think it would be immoral to know that there is a viable solution out there which would save literally thousands upon thousands of lives here in the U.S., Mexico, South America, other countries around the world, to know that solution exists and not to make it happen. And third, I think it's also immoral to, how can I say this? You mentioned prisons.
Yeah.
And I think it was in your opening there. Talked about prisons.
Yes.
Jesus is not for putting people in prison unless, and this is my opinion, from what I know of the Bible, and I read it as much as I can, unless you have to protect society from someone who is extremely dangerous. But for the most part, he's not about prison. He's not about locking people up by the thousands. Well, I guess we could say by the millions, huh?
Yeah.
By the millions for people who decide to put something, which is a plant that God has put on this planet, for them deciding to put that in their bodies. It's immoral to put someone in prison for that. So those are 3 points. When I talk about that in front of the faith communities, they tend to agree.
That's excellent.
No issue.
That is so fantastic. Major Neil Franklin from LEAP, thank you so much for joining us here on the show, and we'd be glad to have you back anytime you'll be here.
I look forward to it, Russ. Keep up the great work, man.
Oh, thank you so much. Everybody, check out LEAP. You can find them on the web at leap.cc or copssaylegalizeddrugs.com. Great organization, lots of law enforcement fighting on our side to end the prohibition they no longer wish to enforce. We'll be right back with a radical rant.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they won't keep no mollies.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Hear me say,
free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Got to rant a little bit on this story we covered earlier on the Michigan Narcotics Task Force raiding the medical marijuana patient lounge. Late-breaking news off the wires, Cannabis Carry gave me the news that all of the people found inside were indeed legal medical marijuana patients, and the gentleman who was running the little club for the patients to gather and medicate himself is suffering from cancer. So there's a delay here on whether or not they'll be prosecuting the guy because, you know, it doesn't look so good to be putting cancer patients in prison for 15 years. But I wanted to talk about this whole notion about the medical marijuana lounges or cannabis cafes, because within this story, they get a quote from the sheriff. I just wanted to pull this up. It was Ingham County Sheriff Gene Rigglesworth, whose department handles law enforcement in the county, has called the club, quote, a joke. Quote, this is exactly what law enforcement said would happen when they passed the medical marijuana ballot measure. This has nothing to do with medicinal marijuana. This has to do with getting high. And as I read this, this is in the Lansing Journal. I've got it up at stash.normal.org if you want to check it out, leave some comments or whatever. But the sheriff was also joined in the comments by some people. Some of the readers of the Lansing Journal added these comments. Let me just read a couple for you here. This club is not what I voted yes on. This was all supposed to be done out of sight, in the privacy of one's home. I hope this law gets changed to eliminate these loopholes without harming the intent of what we thought we were voting yes on. Here's another comment. I agree that these places are a joke. Nothing but a big pot session. Sit around and get stoned with other stoners. And our third one. A raid means there is something unlawful going on, so they are not law-abiding citizens. Duh. Another good job by the sheriff. You can't just go smoke marijuana anywhere you want, people. Well, first of all, a raid does not mean something unlawful was going on. It means something suspected of being unlawful may have been going on. Lots of times the police raid places that where's nothing going on, but let's just leave that aside for now. Let's just get to this notion that sick and disabled people using medical marijuana should be shut-ins, you know, chained to a radiator in their basement to use their medical marijuana. Imagine for a minute that you live your life with some severe chronic pain, right? It's so bad that, like, getting out of bed is a major effort for you. Or maybe you've got seizures or muscle spasms and your life is filled with constantly fighting your own body, trying to control the tremors or the seizures that make you just so uncomfortable in public and can even hurt yourself and others. Or maybe you've got a digestive problem. That's it. Maybe you got chronic nausea or maybe an irritable bowel syndrome, one direction or the other, right? Where everywhere you go, you got to know where the toilet is. You know, at any moment you may be puking or something worse. Or maybe you got brain cancer, right? And you got no hair on your head and your eyebrows are gone because you got chemotherapy treatments. Or maybe you're pale and gaunt from HIV/AIDS. And either way, everywhere you go, people shun you. They kind of step away from you, afraid that you're contagious. You're going to catch something. The physical ailments are tough enough to deal with. These people have an emotional toll of dealing with being sick and disabled, constantly weak, out of control, anxious, and shunned by the people around them because of their physical ailments. Now, we know from medical science that sick and disabled people with good social support systems do better than people that are lonely shut-ins. So why would we want to discourage medical marijuana patients from sharing each other's company? Because the sheriff and the other commenters that I mentioned said this has to do with getting high. Well, what is getting high anyway? Is it relieving stress? Is it relaxing your body and having a laugh with friends? Socializing? Maybe catching a little buzz? Sick and disabled people shouldn't be allowed to do that? Because I know if these six or seven medical marijuana patients were down the street at the tavern tying one on to get a little bit of buzz, nobody would have even blinked an eye at it, right? So it can't be that we have a problem with people getting a buzz on, is it? Because apparently we don't. We have taverns and bars all over this country. But the thing is that these people just can't get past the demonization of cannabis use. They see people that are smoking pot and they immediately think moral thoughts about it. They have a moral judgment about it, that they are, like we talked about with Major Neil Franklin, they're trash, that they're the cause of all the problems in the world. So he can't see, this sheriff just can't see that this is a medicinal use of marijuana and thinks that it has nothing to do with medical marijuana. The reason why is because he sees people in a social setting and therefore it can't be medical. But the problem is people use medicine in social settings all the time. If they were OxyContin patients, they could be medicating in a social setting. They could be popping a pill if they felt a little pain. People who are on Prevacid, they can take it sitting at the table of their restaurant before they start to eat. Darvocet patients can pop one while sitting in the bleachers of a ball game if their back starts to hurt. The diabetic at a rock concert could go to the restroom and shoot up some insulin. And let's not even talk about the guys using Viagra, Levitra, and Cialis, which is the perfect example of medication and socialization as one. None of these options are available to the medical marijuana patients. They are expected to be shut-ins in their home, medicating out of public view. That's what it says in the laws. Because if the patient's nauseous at the restaurant, nobody's going to let her light up a doobie. Not even outside with the tobacco smokers in the cold and the rain. Even if the medical marijuana patient's starting to feel a little pain from sitting in that cold bleacher seat at the ball game, he can't even bring in a medicated cookie to get by. He can scarf down as many hot dogs and nachos as he wants, but no medicated cookies. If the medical marijuana patient goes to a rock concert and is seizing or spasming, he can't just light up a, well, maybe some rock concerts. But still, they'd be facing the possibility of losing their medical marijuana card because they're caught in public view medicating. The point is that medical marijuana patients do not have the social options that users of other medicines have. Therefore, the need for these patient lounges and cannabis cafes that provide a social outlet for people who otherwise would be shut into their home, expected to, you have to make the choice. You can either have a social life or you can use the safest, most effective medicine that helps your condition. It's ridiculous. These are legal users of medical marijuana. The guy was a legal provider of medical marijuana. He wasn't even operating it as a dispensary. He was offering, like the cannabis cafe in Oregon here, people could bring their own, or if the host had some to donate, he'd donate, and they were just basically smoke sessions. People having a chance to get out and having a chance to meet other people that are in the same situation they're in. It's disgusting that we can't allow these people and that we would have some sort of moral judgment against what they're doing merely because they're in a room with other people doing it. People can't get around the idea, and it's because medical marijuana is more than just medicine. It's also a social thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. If these people want to get together in social groups and make networks of friends and have a little joy in their life for once, why is that such an issue? I'm going to bring in Ganja John on this because we talk about this all the time, you know, and we talked about the Cannabis Cafe many times about this. And it is truly a mental health issue for so many people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just telling the guys in the chat, you know, before the Cannabis Cafe here in Portland, I didn't have a single friend in Portland. I didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
And now I have people calling me every day. You know, it's and you know, I wouldn't have this job if it wasn't for the cafe. And honestly, you know, I've told so many people this. 20% of it is medicating. 80% of it is the social aspect.
Yeah.
And you know what? Everyone in that place has something in common, whether it be medical or whether they're just a stoner.
Yeah.
You know, so they have something in common. And you know what? It's the happiest place I've ever been.
Oh, yeah. You know, I always talked about how our cannabis cafe was like what you'd see in a beer commercial or
right.
like Cheers on TV, right?
Perfect bar.
You want to go where everybody knows your name. That
exactly.
kind of thing. You know, everybody knows your name. And
you
it was
literally,
a happy place.
You came down the stairs and people would say your name from the bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like a bar where no one was depressed and no one was upset, you know. So
yeah, no fights, no puking.
Yeah. Well,
it's just it's a beautiful thing and why we can't allow that or why people would have a problem with that when they seem to so willingly accept taverns, bars, where we know there's domestic violence coming out yeah. of that, there's drunk driving coming out of that, there's all sorts of social ills. Leave the patients alone, for God's sake. If you in Michigan, for Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Hawaii, Rhode Island, Maine, all the states, New Mexico, New Jersey, leave them alone. Leave all the patients alone throughout this great country and throughout the entire world. It's a tough enough world to live in when you're suffering. Give them a break. Quit prosecuting them. Quit going after them. Come to your senses, law enforcement. Like Major Franklin said, it's time this has to end. I'm Radical Russ from Rolla J Studios here, and on behalf of the Normal Foundation and Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, thanks for joining us, and stay tuned for the replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9. We are live every weekday, 1 p.m. Pacific at live.normal.org, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.